Hello. I am Tom Allborn, a general surgeon in solo private practice in Ridgewood, New Jersey. I joined the medical staff of the Valley Hospital, also in Ridgewood, in 1987. I served as director of the Department of Surgery for 8 years until this past December, and was president of the medical staff until May 2010. Over the past 25 years, I've had a strong interest in both hospital-based and the national politics of medicine. I've witnessed many changes in the practice of medicine and the delivery of healthcare. I have followed the national debate over healthcare policy beginning in 1993 with the Clinton White House healthcare reform proposals, and of course, over the past 2 years, culminating in the passage of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010, which President Obama signed into law on March 23, 2010. Last week, I was asked by Medscape to watch the President's State of the Union address and to speak about his comments on health care from the perspective of someone with a conservative-leaning point of view. I watched the President's State of the Union address with great interest and was left with a number of impressions regarding his comments on health care. First of all, I was a bit surprised at how little attention President Obama gave to the subject of health care in his speech, particularly after the enormity and rancorous tone of the national political debate on the subject, which led to the final passage of Obamacare 1 year ago, and also given the symbolic repeal of Obamacare on Wednesday, January 19th, by the House of Representatives. Nonetheless, the President's relatively few references to health care are worth commenting on. The President took an encouraging first step when he stated that he is willing to look at ideas to bring down costs, including medical malpractice reform. Hopefully, the President and Congress will take the bold steps necessary to enact meaningful changes in the way our country deals with medical malpractice. First of all, legislation needs to be enacted to limit non-economic damages in medical malpractice awards to a maximum of $250,000, as exists in both California and Texas. In fact, legislation proposing limits on pain and suffering awards was introduced into the House of Representatives this past Monday and must be passed by both chambers of Congress and signed by the President if his commitment to medical malpractice reform has any credibility at all. But this would be just a good first step. Panels of medical experts, attorneys, and laypeople should be created and empowered to review all medical malpractice claims and attest to the validity of these claims before doctors and patients enter into the very costly and emotionally devastating legal process of discovery and trial. Healthcare courts should be established to hear medical malpractice disputes, presided over by judges with expertise in medical malpractice. And to truly defuse frivolous litigation, laws should be enacted requiring the loser in all medical malpractice proceedings to pay the court costs and legal expenses of both parties. The President also spoke of, quote, reducing health care costs, including programs like Medicare and Medicaid, which are the single biggest contributor to our long-term deficit, unquote. But he gave no specifics. We have been told in the past by the President and have been led to believe that the Affordable Care Act will decrease costs through both the Medicare and Medicaid systems. In fact, the very opposite is likely to happen. According to provisions in the Affordable Care Act, a gigantic portion of the savings in the Medicare program are supposedly going to come from cuts in physicians' fees, as mandated by the Sustainable Growth Rate Formula, most recently projected to cut Medicare payments to doctors in January 2012 by 25%. But as we all know, these cuts, which we have all faced every year for the past decade, never get enacted because of the fear that so many physicians would drop out of the Medicare program. This past December, these cuts were once again postponed for another 13 months until January 2012, when the problem will again be addressed and most likely swept under the rug. And for the 32 million individuals who are presently uninsured in our country, they will be enrolled in Medicaid. The enormity of the increased cost to provide care for 32 million more people and the burden on state budgets and their tax-paying citizens is the driving force behind the lawsuits initiated by 28 states challenging the very constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. The real solution to reducing the total cost of health care in our country is not going to be accomplished by providing the uninsured with insurance, though this is certainly a goal we should work toward. What we need to do is consume fewer health care resources. How? First, as the First Lady Michelle Obama has proposed in her Let's Move campaign to end childhood obesity within a generation, we as a country need to incentivize people to live healthier lives. As a nation, we need to smoke less and eat less. We need to exercise more, and we need to control our blood pressure and cholesterol levels better. And when people do these things, they need to receive significant and monetarily meaningful reductions in their health insurance premiums. And those of us who decide not to lead a healthy lifestyle should pay more for our health insurance. In the same vein, I also agree with the Affordable Care Act's provisions to provide all insured individuals with preventive tests and services such as diabetes screening, annual mammography, routine colonoscopy, and other screening tests free of copays and deductibles. At the same time, though, we need to discourage frivolous visits to physicians' offices and emergency departments, which in and of themselves initiate a cascade of medical tests and treatments, which in many cases are not completely medically necessary, but ordered by physicians practicing good defensive medicine. So how do we do this? By allowing the free market to increase insurance copays and deductibles. Everyone I know has seen enormous increases in their health insurance premiums over the past few years. And if you are anything like me, you have been forced to increase your family's deductible. And if you are like my family, you probably are much more aware of the cost of prescription drugs, the cost of office visits, and the cost of tests than you were 5 years ago. This is the best way to reduce a person's entry into the healthcare system in the enormous vortex which awaits the unwary patient. Health savings accounts were created years ago to encourage people to be more responsible with their healthcare dollars. Tax-free contributions to these flexible spending accounts, unfortunately, will be greatly reduced as of January 1, 2014, under provisions in the Affordable Care Act. President Obama also spoke specifically about provisions in the Affordable Care Act which guarantee full coverage for individuals with pre-existing conditions and about provisions which eliminate lifetime limits on coverage. Both of these are laudable proposals, but there is a great deal of concern that people will choose not to purchase health insurance and instead pay the less costly penalty and government-imposed fine until they become sick, at which time they will purchase full coverage at preset rates. This needs to be modified to encourage people to purchase health insurance when they are healthy, or else run the risk of suffering significant financial consequences if they become ill while uninsured. People need to think of health insurance just like we think of homeowners insurance. If someone owns a home and decides not to buy fire insurance, he He knows how much he could lose in the event of a fire. The same should be true of protecting our health. This could be achieved by imposing a 6 or 12 month period in which pre-existing conditions are not covered, just the opposite of what has been proposed. There is also concern that small and large businesses will drop their employees' health coverage and force them to seek coverage in the federally mandated state health insurance exchanges, which will also be subsidized by tax dollars, thus shifting the cost to the taxpayer and creating another significant obligation in this government entitlement program. Of note, the president failed to mention many other ideas that might help decrease the cost of health care directly or decrease the existing costs to consumers and businesses. For example, he did not address the notion of purchasing health insurance policies across state lines. Americans are restricted by state regulations to purchasing health insurance from only a select group of carriers. Individuals should be free to purchase health insurance plans of their choosing across state lines, thereby increasing competition in health insurance pricing. Nor did he address the portability of health insurance if an individual leaves his or her job. In addition, the president did not address the extremely pressing need to reform the Medicare Sustainable Growth Rate formula, which, as I mentioned before, threatens physicians with reimbursement cuts annually, only to be delayed and postponed to some future date but never definitively resolved. This is an issue of great concern to all physicians who care for Medicare enrollees and is in great need of permanent reform. These are just a few of my views on the President's State of the Union address and on health care in America in 2011. Hopefully, in the coming months and years, led by the President and our congressional leaders, in the spirit of cooperation, we will be able to implement modifications to the existing health care legislation, which will lead to healthier lives for all Americans, reduce the out-of-control consumption of health care resources, and hopefully reverse the creation of another enormous tax-supported government entitlement program and return the business of providing health care back to the private sector in collaboration with physicians, hospitals, patients, and their families. Thank you for listening. We look forward to your comments.